You're listening to the North Peace Roundtable Podcast, your weekly podcast about theology and the Christian life. Forgot to look up what episode we're on. 136, I believe.
I think it's 136, yeah.
I do believe so, yeah.
Because you were sick last time, Corland. But hey, thanks for tuning in. My name is Andrew. With me, 85% of the time, is Corland.
Hello, hello.
And Cameron.
Almost. I'm probably
batting
pretty good lately.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cameron's the dependable one. So now. Yeah, I kind of
flips right. That's right. We take turns.
Yeah, and I'm always here because this is my office, and I'm just counting. This is my work, so.
Key to the church.
Yeah, key to the church.
If Andrew can't make it, it doesn't happen.
But yes, thanks for tuning in. If you're new to the pod, us three guys sit around and talk about either questions that people have that get sent in or interesting topics one of us will kind of bat around with somebody else. So
do you remember a few years ago, I was just thinking about that when you were doing the intro, where we actually recorded the video and we sat close to each other.
Yeah.
And then COVID happened and we're like, oh,
we can't.
The judgment because we're within a meter.
Yeah, it's audio only now.
Yeah. Well, joke's on you, folks. We didn't get any further apart. We just stopped recording it.
We just sounded like we were.
Yeah, we were down in the church basement.
Yep. And we had that cool backdrop that we put in there.
Yeah.
My wife was a guest on one of the episodes.
Right.
Right. I wasn't there for that.
Nope.
Wasn't having it.
But, Cam, you have the question for tonight. Oh, yeah. And we're also recording at night, which is not normal.
Why did you have to start work at 7 this past couple weeks?
Now I have a coworker who's in school, so they needed shift coverage and whatnot. So
yeah, if you didn't know, usually we record at 7 a.m. on Thursdays, but it is now 8:10 p.m. and my bedtime clock is ticking.
Well, it's a Friday night,
and it's a Friday night.
That's how wild and cool
we
are.
So awesome! Yeah, let's wrap this up so we can go to bed.
Are you kidding me though? I always want to talk about theology on a Friday night. It's my wife that's like, "Nah, Corlin, let's go to bed."
Let me just go to bed. Kidding. Yes. Anyways, Cam.
Cool. Yeah. So. This is something that has been like a topic that's been tossed around a lot more in society. And what it is a couple questions that were framed around the church's response, if any, and what should it be to how Canada society has been responding to the idea of reconciliation with Indigenous people. And since moving to Fort St. John, not having any idea of it before coming up, realizing that we're like surrounded by communities who are the reserves, and then learning a little bit about them, and then with their, I feel like there's a couple different waves coming of how do people interact with the idea of reconciliation. And we live in a northern, maybe a little more conservative community where I've heard every kind of sentiment, like, not my problem, don't care, don't know nothing about it, very interested, have no idea if we have a place or what that place would be, specifically as far as the church is concerned. So a couple of questions that stemmed out of that were like, what role, if any, does the church have to play in the idea of reconciling with Indigenous people?
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people in our society blame the church globally for a lot of the historical wrongs that have been done to Indigenous people in Canada. And the question was, like, wasn't that just the Catholics? Like, what would, you know, the North Peace MB in Fort St. John in Northern BC have to do with any of that?
Yep.
And so those are kind of, like, I think, good discussion topics to talk about. Because I think a lot of people either hear about it and they just remove themselves entirely, or they think, like, it's not in my backyard. It has nothing to do with me. But there is this growing... I think response societally to acknowledging something, but I don't think people know what to acknowledge. And so you see, like, you know, I was just in Vancouver and there's, you know, a land acknowledgement at the beginning of a meeting. And I look around and, like, I don't think anyone really knows what's being said or why it's being said. It's almost as though they've just adopted this system, which I critique, also thinking, like, well, I don't think that was the spirit behind that acknowledgement if it's just become so routine.
Yeah. But do you think that's done, like, when did that start? Why did that, was that just kind of like, oh, we want to help reconcile, so maybe we'll just acknowledge that this was your land? Is that where it comes from?
So, no, I think, and I wish I had more of the history, but it was really since 2015.
Okay.
In that neighborhood where There was actually a commission struck in Canada, Truth and Reconciliation.
Right.
Commission.
Yes.
And that's not very old. And I think we've even talked on the podcast a number of weeks ago where a lot of people think, it's all just history. It's all just in the past. And I believe I shared, and if I didn't, that like for my own journey, like my grandparents were in residential school. And my mother was put into a boarding school, not allowed to attend normal school till grade 4. And like, that's my mom. Like, that's not like history. Right. So I think that, certainly since the Truth and Reconciliation Committee and their calls to action, where, you know, nationally these groups got together and started telling stories and telling stories about a lot of hurt, but also a lot of resilience and victory through that. And I, you know, when this comment, like the church was evil, certainly there's some deep history there that's really problematic as far as the church's response. But have you guys heard or navigated that or thought through that at all as far as like being a pastor of the church?
Oh yeah. Corland, why don't you, no, that's a good question. Cause I think on that list, the MB conference was involved. I don't know how much or whatever, but they're one of the churches listed as participating, I guess, in the residential school thing, which was interesting. I didn't know that. It was an interesting, you're right, that I think most people are like, those Catholics are evil.
Sure.
And it's like, actually, it's almost every denomination that participated in some way, which was interesting news to me. I didn't know that. I'll share a funny story that I was in a plane crash a while ago. This is background to the story. I'm not going to go into the details of that. But float plane, and there was a school out. I'm not going to get the name of the reserve right, which I apologize. One of the reserves, one of the schools out there was reading Hatchet, which is a story that even my kids read at Finch. Mm-hmm. And it's about a boy that survives a float plane crash and has to survive in the woods. And so a lady at our church works at this school on one of the reserves and said, "Hey, I thought it'd be cool. Would you come out and share your story with these children?" Or maybe not children, like teenagers. Because then it'll connect to like the book they've been reading. So I drove out one day.
When was that? Yeah.
Oh, that would have been like, so if the plane crash was 3 years ago, that was like 2 years ago.
Oh, random. Yeah.
So drove out there, and there was only like 5 students, I think, in this class, but shared my story, and this connects. I'm getting there. But at the end, we're like talking about a few things, and then the teacher, one of the teachers, was just like asked basically the same question you just asked. So you're a pastor. Do you have anything, any comments to make about the residential schools in front of these kids? And I was just kind of like, really put on the spot. So I said, I can't remember what I said fully, but like, I didn't know if she wanted me to, it was just so awkward.
Sure,
am I supposed to apologize to these kids? I'm like, so I just remember saying something along the lines of like, it was awful what was done, and the fact that, you know, people did those kind of things in the name of Jesus, and just, you know, a lot of bad things were done in these schools, and I think it's, you know, I can't remember what I said, but that was my only like, like being put on the spot as a pastor being like, what do you have to say for yourself? And it was just kind of like,
I don't know
how to answer this question.
Oh, wow. I don't think you've ever shared that before.
No, it was super awkward. But I think another teacher asked a different question and we just kind of moved on. I think that teacher maybe just thought like, here's a chance for someone who represents the church to say something. It was just kind of like, sorry, my bad.
Yeah. It's funny, like, you know, obviously I spent 12 years with Salvation Army, and one of the women, the territorial indigenous consultant for the Salvation Army, who's Sherry Russell, who is actually the board chair of the seminary that I attend, who is a wild, has a wild and very interesting story of surviving 60s scoop being taken from her family in the foster system and cycled through. And
what just did you say? 60s?
The 60s scoop. It was actually so after.
I didn't hear
and
you.
During residential school, once that system failed, it was like, we're just going to put you all in foster care and into the white homes. And so indigenous children taken from their homes for like really super trumped up charges. I don't want to like take her story, but I remember the part like her mom left to like literally go shopping, left her with her older sister or cousin, and the officers came at that point and took them, and she never saw her mother again till later in life. I think her mom died, And she was, you know, born and raised to think that her family didn't want her, but only to find them later on and realize where we were looking for you this entire time.
Man, oh man.
But anyway, so she shared how the Salvation Army was named during the Truth and Reconciliation Commission findings as being a perpetrator of residential schools. And it turned out they had one home in Saskatchewan, I believe, for pregnant women. And it was pregnant women from who were Indigenous from reserves. Okay. So they were complicit or complacent. They were named anyway, but really the truth around that is they weren't developing this home to indoctrinate young women into Christian religion. They literally just set up a support home for women who were pregnant, mm-hmm. who happened to be Indigenous. So their name was removed later because there were proponents that were obviously far more engaged. But yeah, did you want to?
Yeah.
Before we go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah. I think it's something that it's hard not to think about in our culture, at least somewhat. I'm sure there's individuals that hear about it and just, you know, like you said earlier, say it's not my issue.
Don't
and just
care.
Move
or whatever.
On. Don't
sure.
care. I think as a part of the church, to hear of things that were done unjustly against people, that should move us deeply, right? Like that should be something that is cause for concern because we serve a God who is infinitely just. So it should be something that stirs in us at least a reaction. I don't think that you can be a Christian and not care about injustices in the world.
Well, yeah, there's so many passages that are like do justice and love mercy and walk humbly with God. That's yeah. in the Minor Prophets. And yeah, there's lots of examples where it's like, okay, you as followers of God are called to love justice.
Yeah.
Sorry, I think when it's like when it's an arm's length away, it's easier.
Sure.
And there's a funny meme I just saw of like this guy walking down the street with these two like refugees. And he's like, saw a freedom sign in the front yard. Hey, do you think everyone here should have freedom? Absolutely. Welcome everyone. Okay. These guys need to live here with you tonight. Whoa, whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. Just wait a second. Yeah,
well,
yeah.
They can come across. Absolutely. Yeah. There's room for everyone. Cause in our own church community over the last number of years, I've heard that sentiment, like actually shared with me, like not our problem. Stay away from us. I think I might have shared with you guys, like when even I was nominated a few years ago for the elders board, someone shared with me, finally, we got some diversity
on the elders board. Yeah.
But in a kind of like sideways way, but the intent was probably completely genuine and,
sure.
and true, but it was a little bit of a step back thinking like, oh, I don't want to be a token.
Yes.
Native,
right.
in a white MP church.
Sure.
I think that's the tension for anyone who does deeply care about the individuals that were affected by the residential schools or like the 60s scoop, like you were saying, is how do we interact with that now, right? Like how do we interact with the individuals affected by that now? I think that's the question that's usually at the base of these kinds of conversations, because I feel like the terminology behind what, or the terminology that's used behind these conversations for me doesn't present an accurate picture of what needs to happen. Cause like an acknowledgement to me is like, oh yeah, no, I realize that happened. And I like, you can acknowledge that something happened, but acknowledgement to me doesn't feel like an action. It feels mm-hmm. like you get told something, you acknowledge it and you move
Does
on.
Does it feel like cheap? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Sure.
Cause then, like if all that happens because of these stories coming out is people saying, oh yeah, I believe you. That to me is just one step, is the acknowledgement. If there's actually going to be reconciliation, I think that flows much deeper. And I think that what is often pushed forward, and I'm not saying this as if I have all the answers behind it, but I think what's often pushed forward aren't actually real, like problem solving solutions to these kinds of things. I think that they serve as I don't even know a good word to use there, but
yeah,
you know what I mean?
I think,
maybe I'm off. I'm.
Have either of you have heard of the term like the doctrine of discovery as far as church?
Yeah. You told me about
goes?
That.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that is, what one of the calls to actions were for specifically churches. It was to denounce the doctrine of discovery.
And why don't
for
you just like for
yeah.
30 seconds say what
so
it is?
So essentially, there's those who believe that, like, you know, so the government and the church in discovering, quote unquote, this new land, you know, the church felt compelled to, you know, take some promises from the Old Testament, like, you know, I'm going to give you all the land. I'm going
yes.
to anything in my eye sees is yours. And, you know, God has, you know, there's a lot of like Joshua kind of sure. references into yep. going into this new Canaan and defeating the giants. And it's interesting because one way I heard it described best was, and I wish I remembered the presenter, but essentially that this doctrine of discovery said we discovered a new place. And in order to civilize it, we had to determine that those inhabitants were no longer civil.
Yes.
In order to like sell it to
yep.
England. And so then the government was faced with a bit of a problem. It's like, well, we've acknowledged folks are here. We've had relationship with them for quite a while.
Yep.
So how do we then colonize? And it's like, well, we have to establish that these folks here are no longer or are not using the land for civil means.
Yeah.
And so, well, then what's defined as civil? It's like, well, God fearing, you know, like doing religion the way we do. And thus this partnership with the church, essentially. And so you hear of, you know, founders of colonizers in Canada saying, you know, the soul we want to redeem.
Yes.
It's the person, the Indian that we don't mind killing.
Sure.
Which led to like much throughout human history, the Crusades, like we're just taking God to these places.
Yep.
And if they believe they can be saved, and we'll whitewash them and they'll be one of us. And if not, then we'll kill the demon. Mm-hmm. And it's that kind of mentality that I think was really the driving factor in like, well, how do we then educate these people?
Yep.
Well, we're going to put them in schools.
Yes.
And,
it's interesting because it's like that happened all over the world. I mean, I remember even in China, part of the missionary effort in China was to like, we're going to help make these people civilized.
Right.
And so they would send missionaries from Europe, and part of their missionary, like, look, I'm wearing a suit and a tie and I'm respectable and I have manners and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And then it was Hudson Taylor, who was a pioneer, who was like, I'm actually going to them. I'm going to dress like they dress. I'm going to eat what they, I'm going to do their customs, because who am I to like come in? And he led hundreds of thousands of people to the Lord, being like, it doesn't matter if you act like a white person or a Chinese. It doesn't matter. What matters is the gospel. But people, other missionaries hated Hudson Taylor
because sure.
they said terrible things like, you dress like a savage. Mm-hmm. They like mocked him.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting that, I don't know. That
there's quite profound leaders. And one of them, I was honored to be a student, who are doing contextualized indigenous ministry, serving Jesus.
Yeah, that's cool.
Fearing God. But you'll walk into their quote unquote church and everyone's in a circle. They will use a traditional drum. It's interesting because I think for someone who, you know, might be completely unaware or ignorant of that culture, you would look and you'd immediately think demonized.
Like, sure.
That can't be God-fearing. But you'll jump on a plane and go to Africa and watch a bunch of people dance around a fire and be like, oh, wow, I heard the name Jesus and I heard the word hallelujah. Praise God, they're all serving the Lord Jesus. But in our own country, we'll see that and be like, that's not Christ worship, because I believe that in the West, we've defined what it means to serve Christ and what it looks like,
feels
like, smells like, and sounds like. To say anything other than that is not God-fearing worship.
I think that that's a relatively human trait to do, is to say we're right, you're wrong, no matter which group we're a part of, right? Like it's human nature, I think, is to look at ourselves as greater than the person beside us. But I'm not saying that it's right,
for sure,
but I think that that's common across culture. It's not just white North American people that do that, right? Like even, any culture, but that doesn't take away from the fact that, like you said, to take away from someone's worship. Like you said, who are we to?
Well, when I went to Zambia and the church service there was like, they danced all around. And I remember being like, there's a lot of hip movement.
Sure.
And if we did that here, you're making the men stumble. You can't dance like that. Or you're not supposed to move your body like that. But it was amazing because it was like, this is just how they worship. And this is their culture. And it is like, they had all these drums on stage and they were banging the drums and then not chanting, but like kind of.
Well, it's like very rhythmic.
And their singing is very, I would just call it chanting because I don't know what else to call it.
Yeah. but
it was just like, it was cool.
Do you ever remember that Blue Like Jazz book? Have you ever read that way back in the day?
Oh, yeah, way back.
Well,
yeah.
One story out of it was about a missionary who went to a tribe and there was topless women.
Yes, yeah,
but
yeah,
they were still God-fearing and called that modest. And in his mind, it's like, well, it's not modest. You're naked. And they're like, no, no, this is how we are. That's not modest. The men don't stumble in that way. And this North American missionary couldn't reconcile that and thought they were sinning against God Almighty because of the way they were in that setting.
Yeah.
And I think that is a very interesting thought to have in integrating with intercultural worship.
But and this may be a rabbit trail, but it's even cool today, like, you know, in our own context, like MB Mission, which is our mission branch from Canada that goes around the world and multiply and things like that. Their mission is much more like, let's raise up local leaders rather than sending in, you know, because they're like, that seems to be way more effective.
Yeah.
When you're like, instead of, okay, we're going to send a full-time missionary from North America to Thailand, why don't we go on a trip and like equip some Thai people?
Right.
Hey, here's how you share the gospel. Here's how you plant a church. You guys can do it. Like,
yeah.
So I think that's actually, and we've joked about that. Like, I'm going on my missions trip in quotes, my vacation, right? And I'm not saying all mission trips are like that, but sometimes they are. I mean, I took kids on mission trips to Mexico, and I mean, it changed their lives. It was good, but we also went to Six Flags on the way home and hit the roller coasters and stuff like that. So it was just interesting, like the idea of like, why don't we train local people to do missionary work rather than anyways.
And we said it before, but I think that idea of going into any setting and thinking you're bringing the gospel or you're bringing Jesus is actually like probably one of the most sacrilegious things you can think, that God isn't working amongst people in some way.
Sure.
And I think one thing I really appreciate about the contextualized ministry that a couple of these folks were doing is they're really appreciating God's moving in amongst these people.
Yeah.
And to truly integrate and like you said, of that missionary in the Asian culture who just lived and breathed and walked with them.
Yeah.
Obviously his mindset was, God, show me what you're doing here.
Yeah.
And I think it's Acts 10 that we've talked about before, where, okay, you might get to the point where it's like, hey, we're worshiping this idol to the unknown God. Let me tell you who God has revealed to me. But I think that Christians today really struggle with that, especially here in the West. And I don't know if it's, I don't know why, but you know, recently in our community, there was this idea put forward that, hey, I wonder if indigenous folks could have a conversation with landowners and hunt wherever they want. I don't know if you guys heard about that.
No.
It caused like almost.
So indigenous people could hunt wherever they want? Is that what you're saying?
With.
Oh, permission from.
And they can anyway, but it was almost implied like, hey, if you own 1,000 acres here, that was, you know, where we moved Doig River, like this would be Doig River First Nations now where we are, had the city of Fort St. John not booted them an hour out of town.
Sure.
And so the idea is like, what if they could, you know, what if you really gave them permission to come on the land that you bought, fair enough, but was once theirs. And there was like an almost riot shouting at the Northern Grand. The guy who proposed the idea, the guy who proposed the idea was from Urban Matters, and they were just trying to do like a, hey, let's all be inclusive. People from this church went, people from most, and they're like, get off our land. Like, there's no way you have all your rights. You've got what you need.
Huh.
Don't think about it. Yeah.
Questions like that are, I don't even know that those topics are at the stage that we're at right now. I don't even know that they're beneficial to like what reconciliation actually is. The thoughts maybe aren't bad, but like, I guess it depends on how we like, the questions become, where do you draw those lines? Because would you let the people who owned the house before you come and start living in your house again? Because they owned it before. They were there before you. Like, I realize that there's great injustices. Like, so I'm not saying that lightheartedly, but that's, I think those are kind of the things that people start thinking about with topic of like, someone can just come onto my land, right? Like, if I had somebody come onto my land, I would want them to at least talk to me before. If they were like, hey, I lived here when this house was built, can I come, like, take a walk around your land or whatever.
So sure. Like Tanya, my wife, the home she was born in that her grandfather built was taken away from them 5 years ago.
Yeah.
In Latvia. Just in so if people don't know.
For context.
Yeah. Just in case people don't know.
Because she was born in the USSR.
Hmm.
And so that land was stolen by a woman who fled to Canada. stolen by a country.
Yeah.
We're taking this. You don't have a choice. And so now that they're a country, that woman was able to come back and say, actually, you stole that from me. I'm taking it back. And the courts made my father-in-law pack up and move out of the house his dad built.
Yeah.
And that's a home we lived in. But I think that's the difference is like it yeah. was stolen yeah. unjustly.
Yeah.
Sold in fair trade is a little different. And that's why that for that issue, it wasn't like carte blanche. They're going to come no matter
yep.
what you think.
Yeah.
But they're like, here's an idea. Yeah. What about?
That's why I say like the idea isn't though. Wrong. But so, like it's.
Yeah. Like when you asked me earlier, like pastorally, I think we most Christians, I think usually fall into two extremes rather than like having a discussion like this. Mm-hmm. It's either like, and I've heard both sentiments. It's either like the reaction that you saw, like get over it. I didn't do it. Mm-hmm. I didn't send you to residential school. Let's move on, blah, 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 or that kind of thing. There's usually that ignorant side. Or there's you go all the way to the other side. And I think we saw this. This is a little bit different. But we saw this with like the George Floyd riots yeah. and like where you go so and I want your feedback. We go maybe so far where if a church, it can become like a gospel issue or in place of the gospel or. Because I mean, like, I saw stuff in the Black Lives Matter thing going on that I just went like, I don't know if that's the answer. Like, we want all you white people to now get on your knees and kiss our feet
sure.
to show that you're sorry. And I was just like, but is that the answer? So and then I saw Christians in the United States being like, there is no such thing as racism. Get over it. I'm like, okay, that's not true either. That's yeah. awful. So,
well, in this context, today in my office this morning, I had a meeting with a woman I never met before, and it was going well. She was asking about heritage, and so I just mentioned. And she said, funny thing, we were going through my great-great-grandma's albums and stuff after she passed, and we saw a photo of someone in there who was related to us, and they were pretty dark. So I'm part Native. And it's like,
oh, my days.
And like, so, and she may as well be, and I'm the last person that should judge, but it was like, why did you feel the need to share that with me? Like, you just asked me a question about where I'm going in a couple of weeks to my hometown and where I came from, right? And I mentioned that, like,
we're solidarity, brother.
Yeah, and I think that is sometimes, I don't know, at least for me, that's maybe the other side of that. Like, oh, it doesn't exist. Was my thing. It's like, I'm with you, man. Like, I'm
yeah.
I
think it's like what I mentioned before. The tough thing about these conversations is how do we look at what's happened, but how do we move forward? Because I maybe this is a juvenile thing sure. to think, but I think that even scripture has a lot to say about what we've done, but I think it has even more to say about where we're going, mm-hmm. right? So where do we? How do we appropriately acknowledge what has happened? Because even mm-hmm. like if you talk about like mental health and abuse and stuff, one of the tools that people use is being able to, like, one of the things you have to do is help a person recognize that what happened to them in yes. the past, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And so you have to be able to pull that person to the present though, right? Like you can't let them sit there in the past because that's not healthy yeah. for them. You have to pull them to the present, but to be in the present, you have to be able to have seen what happened to you, but you have to be able to look forward as well.
Except that it shapes you, right? Because like,
oh, it does. Absolutely.
The stranger was actually a woman who was doing some, like our work is mandating all the leaders go through like a emotional assessment counseling thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it's interesting because like, and I've encouraged other folks who are more angry. It's like that. You shouldn't be, in my opinion, you shouldn't be like an angry Indigenous person where everyone's trying to get you.
Sure.
But like my grandpa, Alex, like he,
yeah.
like he was my family. I remember him. Right. And so like, I won't like move through that and forget that, but I think there's healing that can come through that.
And I don't think that a call to be in the present and to look forward is a call to forget what's happened.
But it's interesting because I thought about that sentiment as it relates to our Christian walk. And I've not met a Christian who has, I shouldn't say that. There's been a couple arguments, but in our Christian walk, we all have little kids and you have the newest little kid. You're yeah. okay understanding that your son is born with inherent sin. He's a sinner that needs forgiveness. Why? He didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. He wasn't there. But as Christians, we're actually programmed to think, yeah, absolutely, I need forgiveness. My baby was born with inherited sin against an almighty God and needs forgiveness. And we'll never have an issue with that. But then as a society where we've done quite well and we struggle with the fact, well, we weren't there. We didn't have anything to do with it. But it's interesting that we are okay reconciling that with our own salvation. Like, I actually daily need to walk out my sanctification and righteous living, being mindful of that inherent, or being mindful of that gift of forgiveness. But then how do we relate that to, like, okay, as a society, we're all blessed to be here today because some people went through some horrible things and some terrible injustices were done, but they did shape the fact that we get to just do whatever we want here. And so I don't know if there's a correlation, but I found it. I just remember thinking, and it was only in the last month or so, when people that surprised me thinking, I had nothing to do with that, it's not my problem. Like, well, you had nothing to do with Adam's sin, but you seem to be okay with, like, understanding your need of forgiveness and repentance and walking through sanctification from the moment you were born. And, like, I look at your kids this evening and it's like, well, they don't look terrible sinners, but.
Yes, they do.
Yours did.
Yes, mine. Yeah, when you brought that up, I've been thinking about that a lot, actually. And it's interesting because sometimes the Bible says things that support that kind of thinking, and then sometimes it says the exact opposite, which is super interesting. I'll give you an example. Mm-hmm. Like Exodus, in the Ten Commandments, when he's talking about idolatry, you shall not bow down to them or serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children.
Great.
So visiting the sin of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing steadfast love to thousands of those who love me. So in the context of idolatry, God is like, I think that he's saying that when idolatry happens, it seems to pass down generationally this problem. But then you go to Ezekiel 18:20, and it says, the soul who sins shall die, the son shall not suffer for the iniquity of the father, nor the father suffer for the iniquity of the son. The righteousness of the righteous shall be upon himself, and the wickedness of the wicked shall be upon himself. So there's a verse where you're like, oh, I'm not held accountable for what my dad did, and he's not held accountable for what I did. God seems to judge each person individually. But then there is other verses where you're like, oh, interesting. God seems to say, like, in this case with idolatry becomes so rampant that it just seems to go from generation to generation to generation. And so I've been thinking a lot about that, this balance of, like, you're right. Me personally, physically, I never took someone's kid away from them. Sure. Mm-hmm. But that shouldn't make me then harden my heart to real things that happen and to say, like, it's not my problem because I didn't do it. Like,
and to not change maybe how you interact with those people.
No,
maybe on a different example, right? If you're interacting with an individual and you find out that they have a history of abuse in a certain way, you're probably not going to do things around that to have them even call to memory those kinds of things unnecessarily, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I think that those are conversations, those are pieces worth.
But think about even the way we talk. We do this already. If someone was like, and as a pastor, people come to me all the time with terrible things that have happened to them. Oftentimes I will say, I'm so sorry.
Yep, absolutely.
And I didn't do it.
So is it like empathy? Like,
oh, we I have think a
baseline
it's
baseline of empathy. To I think so. And it's funny because the rhetoric is so terrible. Like, they want our land back.
No, it's, yeah.
And it's funny, like, it's such an ignorant response. So with Montney and Doig, so the government made a deal with Doig when they were just up by the college and said, we'll give for every one of you a mile of land up north. Fine. What society did was call them only the men, human beings, and the women and children in those families got nothing. So when they did their genealogy, they said, actually, on that day when you made that deal with us, there were 300 more people. So they did the math on that. You're right. We're sorry. We actually didn't call you human beings. We only called the men of your family. You got one square mile per man. So once they did that history, they're like, actually, on the day you made that deal, there were this many people standing there that day. The government said, you're right. Here's the difference. You're not going to get the land, but we'll give you the dollar value on that land. That's why they were able to buy the land across from Mount Murray. and buy some land. So they have to buy land that's for sale. They can't just go, okay, we're going to take back this quarter and a lot, you know. So that's like a really ignorant thing. Like, they're going to come and steal our land back. No.
No.
The government said, shoot, okay, we did something wrong. You're right. You called us out on our bad math, and we called men and women's
and,
dogs.
And your inhumanity, right? To not call people people, right?
And that's exactly how that happened. And so I think that when you were just talking about, like, what do we do? I think there's two things that I would get at is that, yeah, I think you're right. Like, if someone's speaking of injustice, I don't think we as Christians can ever turn our back on injustice and be like, it has nothing to do with me, or that sounds terrible. So I think that actively we have to work towards justice. And it's interesting how much effort we put into missions, supporting those who have had terrible things done to them. But we don't do a lot often in churches for urban missions on folks who've had a lot of horrible things happen to them.
Yep.
We kind of say, well, they're here. They could just come if they wanted to. And that might be an interesting thought just in the moment. We might not actually focus on many of those communities because we're like, well, the doors are open for anyone. They could just come.
Right.
Appreciating that they may not want to come.
Yeah.
I think that that's kind of what I was getting at earlier with, like, what do we do now? Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that I've been thinking quite a bit about how God interacts with us as sinners when we're saved by grace and we are made righteous in his eyes. The thing that people say that is one of the best parts about that, obviously, is the relationship that we have with God. Relationship. This has been a thought, like, even in my relationship with Aaron, with the stuff that we've been working through in our marriage over the last year, there have been sins committed, wrongs done, and yet we're in a relationship and have to move forward. And there's times where one of us or both of us might see something black and white, but slightly different than the other. And I think oftentimes we want to try and make sure that those black and whites align as much as possible with each other so that, you know, to say you're on the same page or make sure that you're making progress in that relationship, that you're on the same black and white. And that happens sometimes. There are times where that does through conversation or discussing where you can end up aligning those things. But there's also been times in our marriage where those things still don't align. And we've been married for 4 years. We don't see eye to eye on things. But the difference, I think, and this is where I'm getting with this with in relations to the conversation that we're having in relationship, then navigating those differences looks different because we actually love each other because of what Christ has done for us.
And you respect each other even when you disagree.
Yeah.
Right. So then in a conversation like this, when it comes to reconciliation, I think one of the things that lacks greatly is relationship between people groups, right? Between cultures, between ethnic groups, right? We are happy to say we can live together separately instead of actually being willing to integrate our societies, right? And that's not to say that you're going to take over either way, but to actually live alongside your brother or sister and say, hey, I love you. I don't see eye to eye. Like, there's conversations we've had that we don't see eye to eye, but because we know each other and we know each other relatively well, it's easier for us to then navigate that tension and even come to conclusions that we might not be perfectly aligned on, but to say, well, from here, let's move forward in this way. And in the future, if we realize that that's not a good way, we can adjust. And it's not a matter then that tears us apart. It's rather something that I think God can use to strengthen and build the relationship between people that are different.
Right? And what do you guys think about the thought that maybe evangelical Christians are far more threatened in their faith around other cultures or around other faith groups than some others, for example? I think it's been my experience that because it's so different, or because we're afraid that they might serve a different God, that we don't want anything to do with them. Because I don't see that same struggle with the Sikh community, for example, who goes out to Doi. Like, they do a lot of things together because I don't think the Sikh community is threatened by or doesn't think their kids are going to be influenced, doesn't give a lot of thought into how they're doing. But I do think as evangelical Christians in the West, we're a little more protective of our patterns, and we don't want to integrate too closely, because the marriage example is really good, but it is founded in not only love and respect, but also commonality. And when there isn't commonality, like, that becomes a natural barrier that I think is just fear-based and not really real.
I totally agree with that. Yeah. I think there is, I even think it reminds me of the early church a bit, for a while, only Jewish. And yeah. then all of a sudden there's Samaritans that are now a part of the church and they hated each other. And then there's Gentiles who are joining the church and they hated each other. Mm-hmm. And that's why there was so many. That's not the only reason. That's why there was a lot of problems in the mm-hmm. early church, because it's like, you guys have to become like us. You all need to be circumcised and you need to obey, because the Jews were the first ones. You need mm-hmm. to obey the law and blah, blah, blah. And that's why the whole entire book of Galatians is written, because Paul's like, no, it has nothing to do with right. that anymore. There is no, in the kingdom of God, it doesn't matter if you're a Jew or a Gentile or a Samaritan or a whatever. Mm-hmm. He's like, you guys are one. That's Ephesians 2. You guys are one now mm-hmm. in Christ, right? And I love that at the end in Revelation, it doesn't say like, hey, we're going to be one homogenized. It's like
doing it all the same.
Around the throne is right. every tribe, every nation, every tongue, every language worshiping God. And that's going to look crazy. But I think you're right that every area, every church struggles with things that look different, things that make us uncomfortable. There is a fear, like,
and it's funny the way we've like redeemed worship music, because it's the same instruments sure. that make terrible demonized songs, and yet we'll look at another culture and be like, there's no way that could be worshiping God. You know, I've seen those drums on National Geographic. Yeah. There's no way that is God honoring.
Yeah,
it's like, well, you can't understand what they're saying, like, and I yeah. think that is.
And it makes me laugh because, like, you know, and I, not all Christians are like this, but, like, you know, Jesus was Middle Eastern, right? He's a Jew. He had very dark skin. All the early church was African, Middle Eastern. Like, we're the odd ones out, guys. Right? Yeah. And again, I think it's just funny to me that we get so threatened by things when I'm like, man, can you imagine what the early church things were like what kind of instruments did they play, how did they sing?
And
like,
I wish the Bible went into more descriptive nature on how different yeah. all those churches were, because there's no way that the Reformed Jews, their gathering looked the same as the Gentiles that were, like, you know, a few hundred kilometers away,
totally
also having a gathering, and then never mind when they start using different languages but still
yeah
worshiping the God that was revealed through Jesus. Like, I wish it talked a little bit more about, okay, we're one, but you're all very different.
Yeah.
And that's very okay.
Yeah.
I just don't think we see that. So I think appreciating, and I'm very much of that part. Like, one thing, a legacy that my grandfather left me with, I was just about 13 when he passed, is like, he wasn't an angry person. He was a God-fearing person, went to church his entire adult life that I knew him. It wasn't always like that. But I have family members who are very, very anti-Christian, and I remember posting a few years ago on Truth and Reconciliation Day a picture of my grandpa and my grandma, and he was in a suit for church, and said, thank you for the resiliency and the fact that they taught me not to be an angry person. And one of my cousins actually, like, blasted, like, you have no idea what the church did to them and what they took for them. I'm like, no, I acknowledge that, but the fact is that my grandparents had a relationship with Jesus.
Yeah.
They took me to church as a kid, and they taught me that's important. So whatever they had, despite all that crazy trauma, like, that's what I want. Right. And that's what they left me with. And that doesn't sit well with a lot of people, but that I think is part of that healing responsibility on both sides of the fence yeah. that says, like, you know, yes, it was terrible. And I think it's like how you would view anyone. Like, if you're counseling people in the church, and you find out someone was treated terribly, that's going to be a filter you use, not from sympathy, but from an empathy and an understanding that
yeah.
I'm not going to.
And just practically speaking, right? Like, there's so many studies coming out right now. There's a great book called The Body Keeps Score. Body Keeps the Score, I think, is what it's called. Fascinating book about how trauma interacts with our physical bodies, like, literally how we interact with the rest of the world, right? So to navigate those scenarios, like you said, you have to understand how those things shape a person. And then even through the generations, like, there's studies out too that our genetics are altered by the experiences that we have, and that our genetics then, when we reproduce, are they're different, right? They change. And so our kids are affected by those things too, right? There are studies that show that even just as practically as simple as, like, someone who struggles with addiction, their genetics can make it so that their children would be more prone to falling to addiction. It's not that they will become addicts, but it genetically alters how we interact with the world around us. And so even on a genetic level, those things are important. So then as a church, when we interact with people, broken people on both sides, it has to affect how we move forward. It can't.
But John MacArthur told me there's no such thing as trauma. Did you guys see that clip?
Did he actually?
For realsies. Oh, this is a rabbit trail, but it connects.
Is it old?
I don't think so. But I follow a guy that everyone should on YouTube called Gavin Ortland. And he's, I think it's Truth Unites is his YouTube channel. But he tries to like, let's take like a middle approach to this and not go off into the extremes. But yeah, John MacArthur basically said there's no such thing as mental health. There's no such thing as depression. Oh, no. There's no such thing as anxiety. There's no such thing as trauma or PTSD and on and on and on. And basically like his advice was Philippians 4:8 just says, think about good things.
Truth and what's true and what's right. And what's
not. So this, I'm glad, cause Gavin, his whole thing was like, that is like so damaging. Cause what it does is then it puts it on the individual. The reason that you're struggling is cause you're not a good enough Christian.
Sure.
And he's like, what you just said, of course that's true. Like, of course there's such thing as mental health problems. Now, sure, you can handle it in a bad way and not handle it correctly, but to just outright deny it. Anyways, I'm sorry, that's a rabbit trail. But
no, yeah, but it's really interesting because we in our own context have looked around and anyone walking into a church, like, you don't know what you're going to get. Like, you can get that or you can get something pretty decent. But we don't appreciate that about other cultures. We say, you know, I had this experience with this one tribe that was sacrificing, whatever, right?
Like, they're all that. Yeah.
It's like someone could walk into the most charismatic, crazy church and paint us all with that same brush and be like, which is, I think, what happens a lot with the historical trauma in Canada is that the church is now responsible for that. Subsections of the church were responsible for that. And the reasoning really being that they thought that saving the soul was more important than valuing and loving the flesh and understanding. And it's almost like the quick, easy way to getting them. As long as they got saved, then we didn't worry about destroying them as a person.
I think... I kind of want to share a story. I hate sharing stories about myself because I don't want it to come across as...
You part native?
No.
Yeah, he's like, but guys, I've been waiting till the end. No. We're 47 minutes in. Yeah,
for anyone that doesn't know, Corlin's like a bald white
guy. Yeah, bald white guy with a
big
beard.
Mennonite beard. Yeah.
So I think I've shared on the podcast before. I'm 1/32nd
native. Oh, my goodness. Okay, go.
I think I've shared before on the podcast, but if I haven't, I actually worked at the homeless shelter here in town, the Salvation Army Center of Hope. Really, really cool experience. I was one of very, very, very few professing Christians to work there, right? Somebody who was willing to put it out there that I follow Jesus, that I love Jesus. And it was interesting because, and this is one of those things, you got to be fair. I don't know what people said to other people. I wasn't there for every conversation, but one of the things that, some of the individuals that came through the Center of Hope said to me on a consistent basis was like, why are you different than the other people? Like, we want to talk to you about things because you actually care. You actually do something. And I tell you, the amount of times that I tried to help individuals and like I said, the goals aligned slightly differently or whatnot, or majorly differently. But I think as Christians, when we interact with people, regardless of who they are, whether it's your neighbor to the north or whether it is someone at the Center of Hope or whether it's in the grocery store, parking lot, wherever, it should look drastically different than the rest of the world because of our love for Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And that does then recognize that people have lived through experiences where people have sinned against them and caused trauma and caused them to live differently. But it also then makes it so that that's not the only focus of it. It's that you then are looking to what lies ahead. Right. Even the supervisor there, mentioned, she was like, you're like one of the only white people I know who doesn't act differently around the people in this place. And it's like, well, yeah, because that's exactly it. They're people. Like, I'm two or three bad decisions away from being here myself. Like, why would I ever do that, right? It's not right? So, yeah, I don't
it's
know.
It's probably for a different podcast, but over like the almost 4 years hiring for that place, there's probably only about five professing Christians that would ever wanted to work there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the Sikhs did because they have some deep, you know, socialist pulls. And then non-Christian secular people found it more interesting to be involved in social services than evangelical Christians, which is fascinating.
And and that's just it, is that we see, I think sometimes as Christians, we just see bringing the gospel as literally just bringing just the news about Jesus. But the gospel is actually about the kingdom as a whole, right? Like, it's not just, hey, here's the good news, now do with it as you please. It's like, hey, here's the good news about the kingdom. Like, you can be a part of this, like, come, like, join with us and let's usher in what's coming. And so I think then, like, you, like what we've been talking about, that then changes how you interact with those scenarios.
Well, what you just said reminds me, even Paul says in, sorry, 1 Thessalonians 2:8, he's writing to a church that he planted. He says, so being affectionately desirous of you, we were ready to share with you not only the gospel of God, but also our own selves, because you had become very dear to us. So even Paul's like, I didn't just come and be like, here's the gospel, and now I'm leaving. He's like, I actually shared my entire life with you because you became dear to me. Like, that's what you're talking about. We don't, that attitude of like soul winning, check, save their soul, now I don't have anything to do with them. It's like, this is terrible. The gospel example we have is like people sharing their lives, and not just like, well, once you're a Christian, I'll share my life with you. It's like being involved in people's lives because you care deeply.
The ultimate example of that is Jesus himself.
Yeah, totally.
He came down in the form of a human to be with us, right?
A Jewish human inserted himself into a culture to which he didn't even
You know, so you have someone who comes not, like, yes, to save the souls, but also to live with the people, to be with the people. And so then if we as Christians claim that we're going to Christianize the nation by just changing laws or changing who's in charge, and we don't actually do anything about opening up our doors to the people who need us, or anything like that, then I think we're missing the mark. We're not actually accurately ushering in the kingdom.
It's 9 o'clock.
It's Andrew, for bedtime.
It's Andrew's bedtime.
Yeah. But to land the plane, I don't know. I've really enjoyed this conversation. I think one of the, you talk about, like, you know, churches being involved in reconciliation. I think stuff like this, and not just being ignorant, and people might get offended by that word, but it really is ignorance to be like, I don't care, I don't need to know about any of that. It's like, to actually, and you've shared stuff with me in the past that I'm like, I actually never knew that. Jeez, like, I didn't know that kind of stuff.
Ignorance is not necessarily a negative. It doesn't have to be a negative.
No, it doesn't mean like you're an idiot. It just means that you've chosen not to, I'm ignorant about those things. Yeah. And I think one of the best things that you can do is to, like, ask questions from people who know more than you, and not just assume, well, the government's just trying to screw up everything with the indigenous people and steal my land. It's like, no, don't, just ask good questions. And then, like, this kind of stuff where it's, oh, I didn't know that. And then to show empathy too. Like, if you are a Christian and you, like, hear about people's terrible things that happened to them and you say, like, I don't care, that's like the least Christ-like. The least Christ-like character you can have.
Or they did it to themselves, which is like the whole homeless and the poverty thing. Like, they could.
So the best thing you can do is like, God, give me a heart that is soft towards people that have gone through terrible things. Help me to, like, be empathetic towards that.
I think it's fair to say too, if you're listening to this conversation, you feel, I think for me anyways, sometimes when we talk about these kinds of things, because we've talked somewhat often about these conversations, and I can often feel stirred up or feel almost guilty of like, okay, well, I have to go find something to do, like, right away. It's like, I'm on the way home, I'm going to this and this and this. But I think it's a fair, like, if you're actually looking for sustainable ways to help in ways that don't hurt, to talk, like you said, talk to someone, whether it's going to the Center of Hope and talking to the people there to, like, hey, how can I, who don't work here, how can I actually help you guys with what you're doing? Cause I have a different job and I can't just come here and be here 24 hours a day. How, like to talk to somebody like Cameron, who has lots of information about these things, and you know, it's a good place to start.
Well, I think that's good. We'll leave it there. I think this is our longest episode ever, 54 minutes, 55 Sheesh. Minutes. Episode 136. Thanks for tuning in and listening. Hopefully it's been enlightening, at least, and interesting. And yeah, if you have other questions or things you want to talk about, you can always reach out. And we will talk to you guys next time.